Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of Old North Church as a signal light. One if by land, two if by sea, and I on the opposite shore will be, ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm, for the country folk to be up in arm." Then he said good night, and with a muffled oar silently rowed to Charleston shore. Just as the moon rose over the bay, where swinging wide at her moorings lay the Somerset, British man of war, a phantom ship, which each mast and spar across the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile, his friend through alley and street wanders and watches with eager ears, till in silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramping of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on the shore. Then he climbed to the tower of Old North Church, by the wooden stairs with stealthy tread, to the belfry chamber overhead, and startled the pigeons from their perch on the somber rafters that around him made masses and moving shapes of shade, by the trembling ladder, steep and tall, to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath, in the churchyard, lay the dead, in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep and still that he could hear, like a sentinel's tread, the watchful night wind as it went, creeping along from tent to tent, and seeming to whisper, "All is well." A moment only he feels the spell of the place and the hour, and the secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead. For suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away, where the river widens and meets the bay, a line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats. Meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred, with a heavy stride, on the opposite shore walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side, now he gazed at the landscape far and near, then impetus stamped the earth, and turned and tightened his saddle and girth. But mostly he watched, with eager search, the belfry tower of the Old North Church, as it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely, spectral, and somber and still. And lo, as he looks at the belfry's heights, a glimmer, then a gleam of light. He springs on the saddle, bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes until full on his sight a second lamp in the belfry burns. A hurry of hoofs in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath, from the pebbles and the passing, a spark struck out from the steeds flying fearless and fleet. That was all, and yet, through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night. And the spark struck out by the steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with its heat. He has left the village and mounted the steed, and beneath him, tranquil and broad and deep, is the mystic meeting of the ocean's tides. And under the alders that skirt its edge, now soft on the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides. It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford Town. He heard the crowing of the cock and the barking of the farmer's dog, and felt the damp of the river's fog that raises after the sun goes down. It was 1 by the village clock when he galloped into Lexington. He saw the gilded weathercock swim in the moonlight as he passed, at the meeting house windows, black and bare, gaze at him with the spectral glare, as if he already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon. It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord Town. He heard the beating and the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees, and felt the breath and the morning breeze blowing over the meadow brown. And one was safe and asleep in his bed, who at the bridge would be first to fall, who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a musket ball. You know the rest, in the books you have read, now how the British regulars fired and fled, how the farmers gave ball for ball, behind the fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane, then crossing the field to emerge again, under the trees, at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load. So through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm in every Middlesex village and farm, the cry of defiance and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore, for borne on the night wind of the past, through all our history to the last, in the hour of darkness, in peril and need, the people will awaken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed and the midnight message of Paul Revere. Episode 15, The Midnight Ride. I want to thank everyone for sitting through the very long intro. And I really did work my best to get through the poem itself with limited issues with repeating it. You see, it's written in such a form that it's kind of hard to read and repeat while you're recording. But after probably what is close to 20 separate takes on the sections of this poem, we got through it. So we talked last week about the life and times of Paul Revere. This week, the reason I let off with The Midnight Ride is I wanted to kind of give people what really spread the story of Paul Revere's ride like wildfire throughout America. It's written in the 1800s by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Actually, fun fact, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow lived in a home not too far out of Boston. Fun fact, that home previously was the headquarters of George Washington during the Siege of Boston. So I thought that was an interesting little revolutionary connection. So as we talked last week, Paul Revere had a career during the early days of the pre-revolution as a courier and express rider for the Committee of Correspondence, the Massachusetts Committee of Safety, and of course the Continental Congress. So his skills will be called on once more. Dr. Joseph Warren actually asked to see Paul Revere on the day of April 18th, 1775. Dr. Warren informed him that the British were going to make an expedition to Lexington and Concord. Now, the key objective was to arrest Samuel Adams and John Hancock. When we talked about Samuel Adams and his character study, we had mentioned that the British saw him as a rabble-rouser and wanted him arrested and put in jail so that he would stop burning the fires of revolution. And they were hoping that taking one of the key leaders out of the picture would hopefully alleviate some of the issues within Boston and Massachusetts itself. Now, we now knowing, after studying the history of the American Revolution of the last couple hundred years, know that no matter who was arrested, not unless you took all of the leaders of the revolution out, not just in Boston, but in Virginia and the other colonies, there was no way you were going to stop the revolution, I promise you that. Along with seizing those two gentlemen, the secondary objective was to see whatever powder and guns the colonists were storing. Now, the powder and guns were usually stolen from the British Crown, so General Gage was very interested in getting those back. So Dr. Warren says to Paul Revere that he has to ride out and not only warned Sam Adams and John Hancock, who were in Lexington, but warned the countryside that the British would be on their way. The only thing that was unclear was the route that would be taken. The British had two options before them. They could take a land route, which would lead them over Boston Neck, and they would have to go around the bay, which would add about 8-9 miles to their total travel time to Lexington and subsequently Concord. Or they can go the water route, which is to boat the soldiers across to Charlestown, and from Charlestown march out to Lexington. So, not knowing what to do, they organize two riders. This is something that you don't hear in the poem, and why his name kind of goes overlooked in time. Paul Revere would take the water route and would boat himself across to Charlestown, and would ride out before the British about 10 at night. William Dawes, our second rider, would take the land route. He left about 9 p.m., and he would follow the land route towards Lexington and subsequently move on to Concord as well. Now, the only thing is the question, how could you possibly signal people of which route the British were taking? Well, Paul Revere thought of this. Now, Christchurch, or what we know it as today, Old North Church, was at one point the highest point in Boston. So he organizes a signal system that would take two lanterns, and you would hang them from the steeple of Old North Church. Now, as we heard in the poem, and how we all remember it as kids, one if by land, two if by sea. So, of course, Paul Revere waiting on the opposite bank, and William Dawes riding hard from the city, could look back and see two lanterns in Old North Church, and the two lanterns meant the British were going by sea. Now, this also served a dual purpose. If Paul Revere couldn't make it across to Charlestown, the signal in Old North Church would actually signal people in the surrounding areas that were outside of Boston of the route that the British would take. So as we all know, Paul Revere makes it to the opposite bank. He bypasses the Man of War Somerset, and as two lanterns are raised in the belfry of Old North Church, he rides hard across the countryside. He warns every house that the regulars are out. Now, we all remember when we were kids, we were taught that Paul Revere rides through town saying, "The British are coming, the British are coming." Well, that really doesn't work considering that you're in a colony of British settlers, so of course the British are coming, the British are always there. What he would have said, and what we know he said, was that the regulars were out. The regulars are coming. So Revere arrives in Lexington just about midnight to deliver his message not only to the militia, but to Adams and Hancock. The British are on their way. They're coming to arrest you. Get out of Dodge. And that's what they do. They start packing up and start heading out of town. Dawes, taking the overland route, arrives soon after Revere arrives in Lexington. And now, it wasn't part of their original plan. The original plan was just to get to Lexington, warn Hancock and Adams and the surrounding militia units that the British were coming. But they take it upon themselves, let's head to Concord. That could be a secondary objective, and let's make sure that the guns and powder are hidden. Smart move, because yes, it was actually a secondary objective. So they ride hard for Concord. It's about this time, or a little soon after, that they, on the road, come across Dr. Samuel Prescott, who happened to be riding home to Concord. So the three men start heading towards Concord, and it's about 1 a.m. that the three men are stopped by a British patrol. Now, this is the next unfactual thing that the poem doesn't tell you, is not only is that William Dawes is completely not even mentioned, but Dr. Samuel Prescott is completely ignored too. And this last part, about 1 a.m., the three men are stopped by a British patrol. Paul Revere never actually makes it to Concord. A British patrol stops him. Prescott is able to escape immediately and continues riding hard for Concord. Dawes is also able to slip away not too long after. But Revere is stuck there. But after about an hour of being held, the British have no probable cause to keep detaining Paul Revere, so they let him go. But they take his horse. So the end of Paul Revere's ride doesn't happen at Concord, but actually in the woods between Lexington and Concord. He'll actually make his way back to Lexington just in time to see the end of the fight on Lexington Green and the beginning of the American Revolution. Dawes will make his way to Concord, but Samuel Prescott is the young Sun hero. He makes it to Concord, raises the alarm, and the Sons of Liberty and the militia in the area are able to hide the powder, the guns, ready themselves for a fight, and hide some cannons that were also liberated from the British. Another reason why Gage made sure that the expedition had a secondary objective, which was to take back those guns. Don't ask me why my Thomas Gage sounds a lot like Ronald Reagan. Mr. Adams, give back those guns. Sorry, a little amusing. So next week, as I had said, it's time for Lexington. And we are full on into the revolution. As of next week, the first shots will be fired. We're going to take some time, set the stage, kind of review what's going through the Americans' heads, what's going through the British heads, and then we're going to start having guys shoot at each other. Now, this week, for a recommendation, I wanted to do Paul Revere's Ride. It's a children's book that is the poem, Paul Revere's Ride, by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, but has been illustrated for kids. I don't want every recommendation to be just about adult reading, but also kid reading, because I really enjoy when my students and kids that I did educational programs for when I was a park ranger really got super into the revolution. It was a lot of fun. Before I go this week, I also want to give a special thank you, and I didn't do it last week, but a lot of the Paul Revere information came from the Paul Revere House in Boston. They have a website. It's thepaulreverehouse.org, and it's all about his home in Boston that you can visit. I have yet to have a chance to go visit it yet, but I hope to in my next trip to Boston. They actually have a great biography on our Midnight Rider and a little bit of a backstory on the Midnight Ride, along with some maps and some paintings, illustrations about the Midnight Ride. So they are a wealth of knowledge, and they were hugely, hugely helpful this week. They were probably where I got 90% of my information. So just a huge thank you to those folks. So that'll do it for this week. As always, everyone have a great week, and remember, keep your powder dry.